Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
In this episode, Virginia is interviewing some of WoT fandom's biggest stars. Unfortunately, Andrew and I couldn't be there, but the wheel turns on.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. I'm Virginia, and with us tonight we have three special guests in order, and I will just let them say hello in order after this. We have with us Lee Butler, Jason Denzel, founder and owner of Dragon Mount, and Jennifer Liang. So everybody please introduce yourselves. Lee?
Hey.
Just say hi.
I was on this show, a really long time ago. It was over a year, I thought.
Yeah, about a year.
Yeah, and that time I hadn't yet read the Saturn Storm. So it's a little bit different, but so this will be interesting to see how much I can say.
And Jason, we're happy to have you on board as well.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks. Yeah, good to be back on the show. I've been on a couple times. I think officially the last time that I was on was for the Gathering Storm teaser preview episode as well, although there have since been other episodes where you probably heard my voice. So anyway, good to be back.
And Jennifer, glad to have you back as well.
Yeah, I've been on it before, so.
Oh, what can you tell us? You've all read the Towers of Midnight now, is that correct?
Yeah, well, I know I have, and Jason, as I did, Jennifer, you did too?
I have. I'm not writing review this year.
Okay.
Everybody else has already said everything, so I don't need to say anything.
But the cat's now out of the bag that Jennifer, yes, you have read it now.
Yeah,
I've
quit lying flat out to people when they ask me. It was very funny at Dragon Con because people would be like, okay, so how much do I have to spend to become a beta reader? I'd be like, it's pretty much your soul, but you don't want it.
That I don't think it quite works like that.
No, it doesn't. It's not something you get to ask for.
Yeah,
so I would offer mine, but no one wants it, so...
Well, I mean, I didn't actually even ask. It didn't even occur to me to ask the first time. They basically, I was contacted by four, and they basically said, well, you know, would you like a brief advance view of it? And, I didn't actually ask. So, it was really cool.
There's probably worth pointing out that there's a difference
told that I was going to be doing that. Jason pulled me aside at the first Jordan Con and said, oh, by the way, tomorrow morning you're going to be getting a giant binder full of paper and you have to read all of it and make notes. So I was like, what are you talking about?
It's probably worth pointing out that there's a difference between being a beta reader and getting an advanced review copy of the book.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was not a beta reader at all. I was advanced review girl.
I guess you could say there's pros and cons either one. With the advantage, Lee, that you have over us is that you have read the final copy. The copy that I read, which was a big part of the beta reader, was not the final draft of the book. So of course, there's typos and other sorts of things, but there's a lot of story changes. We're not going to spoil anything, but there was a big climactic chapter that was entirely left out of the version that Jen and I read. And when we read it, we suggested to Brandon, we said, hey, this is really cool, but hey, you might want to punch it up, just a suggestion. And sure enough, in the final version, months and months and months later, we find out, oh yeah, he punched it up, and it would have been far more exciting to read it this way. And that's probably what you read, Lee. Rather than the
I'm trying to think of what I see because there were a number
and I've read the rough draft, but I haven't seen the final version yet. So you guys know what's in the final version. I don't.
Mine was actually hilarious because when I got mine and I won't get in trouble. I don't really will, but they told me you're getting an advanced review, a range view copy. I said, great. And then I get this giant manila folder delivered. and it's like, it weighs like 20 pounds, and I'm looking at this thing going, what on earth is this? And I realized that they didn't actually have found copies of it yet. So they gave it to me on paper, like on, you know, like printer paper. And so it was like a 2 foot high pile of paper.
Yeah, it's huge. I printed off my manuscript version of Towers of Midnight, and it's, you know, those big 3-inch binders? It filled two of those.
Yeah. I was like, I was kind of amazed. So,
and,
yeah.
And that's double-sided paper, too. It's not single-sided.
And I had to carry it home on the...
Aww.
I know. My life is a trail of tears. It really is.
The other thing with being a beta reader versus an advanced review is that on beta reader, we had to earn our keep in that this time around, it was a little bit different for Gathering Storm. We had more time. But for Towers of Midnight, we had an extremely short time. We had like a week to not only read it, but then provide feedback. And so one of the other beta readers had set up a big Google document that, and there was a tab across the bottom. If you picture like an Excel sheet at the bottom, you have the little tab. There was a tab for every single chapter in the prologue. And what we would do is that we'd go in, and each beta reader would put feedback in there, like, you know, for example, no, this is wrong. You know, Perrin's beard isn't gray. And then there was an opportunity for each person to respond to that thing. No, actually, it is gray. Or that's a bad example, of course. But, you know, you can respond to each piece of feedback, and there would be, like, these heated debates. So not only, like so many other people,
yeah, we argued
guy,
over stuff.
Yeah, we argued over stuff, but, you know, we also have not a lot of time. I mean, I work a full-time job. I've got family, all this other stuff going on. At the time, I was also smack in the middle of making the Towers of Midnight book trailer, so I had that going on. So I hardly had enough time to read the book.
Yeah, I was out of town for a good part of that week, too.
Yeah, so we had to, and so there was like, and then, you know, content every day. Brandon would send an email saying, you know, I have now locked chapters 1 through 10. There can be no further changes. And I'm like, God darn it. I wanted, you know, to say one more thing. You know, and so like every day there was like this ticking clock that like was, it ended up being a lot of work. And I, of course, I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of people saying like, oh, but it's like the best job in the world, helping out with, you know, giving feedback on a Wheel of Time book. And yeah, that is pretty cool. But still, it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. People don't understand what it takes to actually proofread and critique a work, especially when you want to be reading it, because you can't just be reading it for the content. You have to be paying attention and catching typos and like you say, things like that. I used to own a small magazine, and I know what a lot of work it is to proof. I'm actually really good at it.
Fortunately, we didn't have to do typos. And, you know, I mean, Tor has a whole machine that does, you know, the editing and the copying. And to be clear, you know, Harriet was the editor on this book. So Harriet's the one making, you know, with Brandon, the big choice. I mean, there's nothing significant, really. Really,
the
what we were there.
The stuff we worked on was really kind of nitpicky stuff that only super fans would catch. Things like, you know, would this character wear that particular color? Are the hairstyles correct?
I always
notice hairstyles.
There were things like that.
Right word here. Stuff like that.
Oh, like my famous Tyvus Shar is a gelding, now he's a stallion, now he's a gelding again thing? Yeah. It takes a geek.
It's kind of like, what Jason and I were doing with the art cover.
It's very similar to that.
So, like, no, actually, Nynaeve would never wear that, and actually, no, that Alienda was not wearing her wise one outfit in this. So it seems she was wearing Westlander outfit. So.
And occasionally there were opportunities to give bigger feedback. And I mentioned, you know, that scene. I think everyone came back and said, this was a great scene, but it's a little anticlimactic for any, you know.
I really wish we'd seen this. I think was the feedback that we gave.
Oh, we didn't say. Well, that's to be clear that, you know, it's our, you know, it was our job to say, this is what we think, and let Brandon come up with a solution.
Yeah,
we're not saying things like, oh, we think you ought to have,
there should be more ponies.
We don't say any of that.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly, more ponies.
More cowbell.
Yeah, and then there was one more thing on the topic. is that there was one time where all of the beta readers said to Brandon, hey, Brandon, wouldn't it be great if this specific character does this? Because, we, you know, at the end, we really thought of, you know, like, this would be so cool and the fans would love it and everything. And he came back and said, it would be cool, but I can't because this is what Robert Jordan wrote. This is his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This is the hands-off, you know?
Yeah.
And so, or if it was, or it was in the notes specifically to say that, because there was a lot of stuff in this book that is right from his fingers. That was, you know, word for word, his copy-pasted in, and yeah. Obviously, you know, that stuff was maybe fixed for typos.
I think a lot of the dialogue came from the notes.
Yeah, a lot of dialogue, and a lot of the good dialogue, too, from what I understand. So,
yeah.
So that's great.
Very cool. So what? So apart from the nuts and bolts of being a beta reader, is there anything that you can tell us about the book without spoiling it completely?
Well, I mean, I had my spoiler-free review up on 4.com, where basically I know you.
I blame you for having to go to the doctor because my sides were so sore from laughing. Thanks very much.
But you know, they do say laughter is. I don't know if that's a load of crap or not, but, you know, they do say that. But, yeah, basically, everyone was kind of giving crap about that list, so like, and not crap about it, but they were just like, oh, you know, kind of guess what I meant by saying most off. And what was really funny is that list was originally a lot longer, but I had to act a lot of it because I realized that my reaction, even though I was trying to make it as generic as possible, like a dead giveaway for what I was talking about. And
yeah. So
I had to edit the list down. It's really annoying because some of them were really...
When I saw your list, Lee, I'd already read the book at that point, and even though the chapters have been probably reordered a little bit, I was probably like a third of those things I was able to point out, and then the other two-thirds, I still, to this point, I'm like, I'm not exactly sure
I bet it was that.
No, I deliberately mixed up the order, though. That's not in chronological order.
I see.
I mean,
okay.
It's a little bit. I mean, like it's sort of kind of generally in it really isn't. It's basically like I deliberately mixed up because I knew otherwise it would be like that's probably why you're because.
Did a lot of people get a lot of them right? Did very many people get all right? Anybody get them all right?
No. No one got them all right. No one got them half right.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like there's been a few that people have guessed that people have guessed correctly, but most of the time they're really off.
Wow. I don't feel so dumb.
You know,
it's okay.
Not,
good.
It's not like it's that surprising because most of that is. Extremely generic. I mean, some of it's a little specific, but, you know, most of it was kind of, it was not almost anything, you know, and I did that on purpose because I didn't want to, you know, like I said, it's a spoiler for you, so I didn't want to make everything a gimme, you know?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. So it can be fun. I'm already working on putting together, like, my spoiler review, and, you know, I'll be saying what I was talking about in each of those and adding all the one section that I put in the first round of the food law.
Right, so let me ask between Jen and Lee, for Virginia and for those listening, all teeny tiny spoiler here, but all I'm going to say is just I'm going to say some names, and these are names of people who appear in the book. These are characters. I'm not going to say what they do. I'm just going to say their name.
Are you going to get shot if you do that?
Nope, I don't know. And people can fast forward on their iPods or on iTunes or on our website. You can fast forward, you know, a few minutes or something. But I'm just going to say some names.
Your life's in hands, man.
I'm just going to say some names. And of those names that I say, which one, Lee and Jen, whose storylines did you enjoy the most? Ready?
Okay. Okay.
All right. Rand, Matt, Perrin, Egwene.
I thought we were doing them one at a time.
Just all of them. Like, which ones are you...
Like, which of those is their favorite?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So wait, say the list again. I'm sorry.
Rand, Matt, Perrin, Egwene, and Ick. Let's say Elaine, too.
Okay. Which one do I like the best?
Uh-huh.
I like Matt the best.
I'm going to go with Perrin.
I'm going to go with Matt as well.
Whoa.
That's fine. Why don't you talk about Perrin? Why don't you go ahead and talk about Perrin? I mean, like, or, you know...
Because I tend to go for moments. Like, you know, that's the thing that really gets me, you know, like that, ooh, that moment was particularly awesome. And so that's why I'm going to go with Perrin. Even though, you know, don't get me wrong, Matt mm-hmm. was pretty awesome too, but Perrin kind of wins on that criteria.
Okay. All I'll say to that, Lee, is that it, and you know exactly what it is, awesome. Was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not
and you should probably know what it is as well.
Gee, I'm wondering if it's my missing Sa'angreal from The Stone of Tear when Lanvair mentioned it. Mm. That's my pet hobby horse.
You're missing what?
The big it thing was so awesome. I'm hoping it was the missing, well, not really missing, but the Sa'angreal that Lanvair mentioned in The Stone of Tear when she said there are two more powerful than Kalendar that were made for a man. One I know still exists, which I presume was the Chodron Kall, and the other one was never mentioned again.
I always assumed that was she meant by two. She meant the Chodron Kall because there's two of them.
Yeah, I agree.
They were two more powerful than Kalendar.
Yeah.
I think the wording
that a man could use.
Yeah, it might have been worded that way, Virginia, and maybe that's the case. But I agree with Lee, and I think with Jen that I think the intent there, and it might have even been updated in a later edition of the book, that mm-hmm. that she is referring simply to the Chodron Kall. That it's Chodron Kall 1 and 2, and then Kalendar is, you know,
number one
after that. So
okay.
I don't, but you know, that is a question, and other fans have brought that up before, and so it's probably worth, you know, sending in a question to Maria to give, you know, the definitive answer on that. And if we get a Raffo, then maybe we'll find out in one of these later two books. But, you know, just saying that going into this book is always my impression that she was referring to, you know, the Chodron Kall.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, like, for me, it could be the other interpretation. But, I mean, you know, all things being equal, I would tend to go with Ockham's Razor on that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. I don't know. I've been wrong often enough that I'm...
Well, I'm always a big fan of Occam's Razor. You know, whatever the simplest explanation has to be the correct one. I don't go in for the really complicated theories.
Well, I've driven myself kind of nuts on occasion with them on occasion, but I try not to do that mm-hmm. anymore.
Yeah, it's real easy to spend a lot of mental energy sort of thing. But going back to Towers of Midnight, I didn't mean to digress onto that. Are there? I guess two of my questions are, you guys mentioned that, two of the three of you mentioned that Matt was your favorite story arc in this one. I just have to say, this is one of my very, very minor criticisms, and it's not even really a criticism. I kind of felt in The Gathering Storm that Matt's voice wasn't quite on spot on, and I'm sure that's something that Banner would probably be working on and so forth, but do you think that's not so much the case in Towers of Midnight? Is he more... like, if you will. I mean, it wasn't far off, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. There were just a few things that kind of jarred a little bit to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard other people say that, too, but, I mean, just in my opinion.
No, Virginia, that's a great question. I'm really glad you brought it up, actually, because a lot of other fans have voiced that about Gathering Storm, that they said Matt was a little bit off, and I think that was one of my criticisms, too, and I think I even said so in the review that I have and on this show last year. And
I think
to Brandon's credit, he worked his butt off to, I know that I think he like found every Matt chapter in, you know, 10 through, 12 and read through it and really studied and, you know, I mean, to his credit, you know, he listened to that feedback and went back and tried to do that. And so I don't know, we'll never really know how much of Matt's writing in book 13 is Brandon's versus Robert Jordan's. You know, if you're familiar enough with all Brandon's books and his writing style, you probably can guess, you know, which portions are definitely his or not. But by and large,
I try not to do that. Yeah,
yeah. But by and large, there's no doubt about it that this Matt in this book is spot on to how I remember him, and he just absolutely shines. I mean, I was not expecting it, but he most definitely steals the show in this and just carries this book, in my opinion. What do you guys think?
Oh, that's so awesome.
I felt like this was more like the classic Matt, the Matt that you always think of when you think of Matt, you know, with the big smile and the flirtiness, and it felt like that classic Matt. And it's possible because Matt's more in his element in this book. He's in a more familiar settings, I guess is a good way of putting it, versus what he was doing in The Gathering Storm. So it felt like there was more opportunity for Matt to be the Matt that we all know and love.
That's
and I really like Matt in The Gathering Storm, so I wasn't one of those people that thought he was really, really off. I enjoyed the Matt parts in Gathering Storm. One of the things I said to my husband as I was reading it, because I like to yell things while I'm reading, was that Brandon had Matt down really well in The Gathering Storm. But I feel like in Towers of Midnight, this is like the classic stereotypical Matt, the one that you always think of when you think of Matt.
Yeah, I did not enjoy it. It just didn't seem quite himself, and not as much. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it was a really minor criticism, but I know a lot of other people had said that. And I really am morally certain that Brandon would make every effort to make it right. And honestly, I am just in awe of somebody who could take up a project like that and bring the first book to completion in the amount of time that he did and just get so much of it so right, even with all the notes and dictation. You know, it's an amazing, amazing accomplishment. So
yeah,
I'm not trying to take anything away from... I would never take anything away from Brandon on that aspect of it. I mean, it's amazing to me that he could have done it at all, let alone that some parts of it maybe weren't absolutely perfect. But,
yeah.
Oh my God, the guy is like a machine. He's amazing.
I was actually discussing this with someone earlier, a couple of days ago, which is that I didn't really realize until he did Gathering Storm. I mean, I had kind of known it intellectually, but not really kind of necessarily realized that how extremely distinctive and difficult to imitate Jordan's writing voice is.
Yeah.
He is extremely, and it's something that you don't really think about. I mean, I kind of liken it to Steven Spielberg's shooting style. Like, unless he's deliberately trying to make you notice it, the thing that makes him awesome is that it's just there. It's just like you don't even think about it. The seams and the buttons and the cuts and everything, they just...
You never see the wheels grinding. You never even get a hint there's wheels grinding anywhere in the
background. Right, there's no effort to... It looks effortless, and that's always the result of actually extreme effort. You know, nothing looks flawless and easy unless it was actually very difficult to do. And so Jordan has this, you know, gift for word choice and narrative flow that, you know, he's really not unique in that, but he's got this very, very distinctive style and this very kind of, it's like an oiled machine with him, and which, you know, sometimes he'll let you get away with him, but, you know, but it was always there, and that is extraordinarily difficult to imitate, and which is why, you know, Harriet and Brandon said that they weren't going to try to imitate it, but at the same time, it's something that you have to try and at least find a compatible rhythm with.
Yeah, you have to at least match it. You can't copy it. You have to do something that's at that level.
Right.
It has to ring true.
You have to at least be able to run alongside the train, you know, and keep up with it and kind of mess with it. You know, it doesn't have to, you know. So, and I think that the thing about me for The Gathering Storm versus Tower of Midnight, and I said this in my review, which is that... he did a good job of meshing with Jordan's style in The Gathering Storm. He did a much, much better job of meshing with it in Towers of Midnight.
Awesome.
And that applies to Matt's POV section, and that applies to pretty much across the board. But Matt, I would say in particular, is a thing that stood out to me as having vastly improved since The Gathering Storm. So,
one of the other differences I noticed between Gathering Storm and Towers of Midnight is the scope. And Gathering Storm was very focused on Rand and Egwene. It was time in the story where there had been a lot going on. There's all these threads going on. But the first thing it seemed like that Brennan, or that the story demanded, was to, hey, we got to get back to basics. We got to find out what's ticking in Rand's head. We got to figure out what's going on with Egwene and the tower. Let's get these things going. Rand and Egwene are the two most important characters in the series in terms of everything basically revolves around them. Even Mad and Parent, it comes down to, it's, in my opinion, it's Rand and Egwene. And I think that's reflected very nicely in Gathering Storm. We got to get back to basics. Let's focus on their stories and get them moving forward so that everyone else can react and go with them. And so that's what happened. And then Towers of Midnight, we still have some Rand and Egwene, but by and large it becomes, I don't want to say just everyone else's catching up, because that's not accurate, but what this is partially in response to what Lee said. This feels like this feels more like a Wheel of Time book that you are familiar with from, you know, maybe book five and later, because it's so big. There's probably more point of views. There's more story arcs going on. They're very focused. They're all going in a direction. They all move. There's no, you know, there's very little, you know, sluggishness, I'll say. But this feels more expansive, and it feels like you're seeing more parts of the world and more plot lines than in Gathering Storm, which tend to be very focused.
I would definitely agree.
In the Gathering Storm, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm saying I agree.
Okay. In the Gathering Storm, we had at least three absolutely epic scenes. Egwene's Battle of the White Tower, Rand's Epiphany, Varen's Demise, and there were a couple of others as well, but those are the three that really stick out in my mind as absolutely epic in nature. Do we see any huge epic scenes like that in the Towers of Night, or more than one?
Oh, my
one?
God.
How many?
Oh,
how many do you think?
Oh, my God.
Easier, it would be easier to list the scenes that aren't epic.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
some hugely epic scenes. In fact, I was, telling my husband about one of them, like, hey, guess what? And, you know, I just, you know, tell him about the scene, and he's like, really? Really, that happens? I'm like, yes, it happens, and it's totally awesome.
There is a retarded amount of epic going on in the House of the Night.
Yeah, I really can't wait now.
That's easy on that score, young Padawan.
We can't say anything, obviously, because of the spoiler nature. And, you know, it's probably not even good for us to say when in the story they occur, because, you know, they'll sneak
they're
up on you in a very good way. They're not all, and, well, again, you know, the version I read, they were all over the place. I did notice that they specifically had moved them around in the final copy, so I don't know what exactly the order is. But I mentioned this in my review. There's one in particular that they're back-to-back chapters, and you guys probably know which chapters exactly I'm talking about, that just blew my mind. Like, I had to stop reading. I told you earlier how much, how short on time I was, and so I'm trying to cram through this. Not cram through, but I'm trying to, like, get through it at a speedy pace. And
yeah, you had a job.
I had to stop and push the book away from me and just, like, lay there and go, whoa. And my wife, you know, I was reading in bed, and my wife said, you know, like, what's the matter? And I said, shh, just nothing. Everything's fine. Just shh. let me just soak this in for a minute.
Oh, man. I know exactly what scene you're talking about. And, yeah. There was one in Gathering Storm that was sort of similar. You know, that the whole, you know, I had to put the book down and walk away for a little bit. In the Gathering Storm, that was the scene when, you know, Rand almost killed Nin.
Yes.
And
me too.
Yeah,
you know, that I had to put the book down and walk away. I was like, ah. And yeah, so there's a scene in Towers of Midnight that I was like, okay, I have to walk away now.
And the difference between them, again, no spoilers here. The Gathering Storm scene. That scene, I agree, Lee. That was the one scene in Gathering Storm where I had to, you know, kind of take a break from reading. Rand and Min. That scene was very personal because I was like, oh, my God, he nearly killed Min. I mean, like, of all people, that's just going to set him off. I mean, oh, my God, you know? This one is less personal and more like, boom, epic. Everyone, you know, just it makes me question whether or not the series will end happily. It's that.
Oh.
Am I crazy? I mean, like, is this just me?
I really, I cannot say anything about the scene without giving it away. So I'm just going to remain silent. But let's just say that this particular scene will take up a significant chunk of my spoiler review when I get to talk about it. So.
Because I want to read it, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, the whole book is, you know, like I said, epic moments galore. But like, there are probably definitely three, four, maybe five points in particular that when I, you know, think about what happened over, you know, and again, I've only read this thing once. I'm actually trying to get through a second reread so I can. I can do the thing that, you know, even just having done the one read so far, there are like four, maybe five points that I instantly think of, you know, like in The Gathering Storm, there were lots of stuff happened, but there's, you know, obviously like those two or three points where you're just like, oh, holy crap, you know, and the scene that he's talking about is probably like one of the top six.
In the scope of the whole series, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the number one scene. That's over hyperbolic, but I would definitely put that one that we're talking about in, you know, certainly the top 10, probably the top 5.
Wow.
Personally.
It's kind of hard for me to say at this point. It depends.
Yeah.
And I can't explain that. But no, it depends on something else that I will talk about later.
Okay.
So there, that's helpful, isn't it?
Yeah. You're going to need to do another podcast of those on after the book comes out, just so we can explain what the heck we're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Remember that thing where we just were incoherent for a few minutes? That's what we were talking about.
That whole thing, right there. My God.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, no, I definitely just consider yourself invited the first time we can get together after the release. Let's do this again because it'll make a lot more sense to people when they have actually had a chance to read the book.
We're not saying critical things, you know, with the guy at the thing at the place, and the, you know.
I've never been to Belize.
Yeah, right?
So how would you guys rank this book of the series as, you know, is it one of your favorites? Is it in the top five? Is it your favorite? What do you think?
I can't answer that question, honestly. I really can't. You know, and the reason why is because if I had waited, if I had never heard of The Wheel of Time up until, you know, like now, and then I was like, oh, look, a nice big 14-book series for me to read, you know, and I just read the whole thing in one, you know, flu felt, then I could maybe have rated this book objectively along with the others, like the older books.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the first seven books are so much a part of my history.
They're like old friends.
You know? Yeah, they're like, you know, it's like the couch that you still have that your mom gave to you. It's for, you know, and you dragged it around to you for 13 different apartments and it looks like it's falling apart, but, like, you love it, you know?
Yeah.
And, that's kind of like, that's how they just feel they're old and comfortable and completely familiar. And so it's really difficult to objectively measure that against this brand new stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Which is in addition, you know, not the same because, you know, it's not Robert Jordan, it's Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson, which is not a bad thing, but it is definitely a different thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I do think that these last two books are better than a couple of the places where I felt like the series really bogged down, which was, for me personally, which was Path of Daggers and Crossroads of Twilight.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a consensus with a lot of people.
Well, I think that's almost a given at this point. But, like, you know, I actually, Path of Daggers is not as bad as I thought it was.
No, it really isn't. I'm in a reread right now, and actually I'm in Crossroads of Twilight, and I'm actually enjoying it more than I remembered.
Right, so. Well, you know, when I did the reread of that, I was dreading getting to Path of Daggers because I remembered loathing that book. Like, I hated it so much, and then I was like, oh my God, this is going to be just like a farce. But then I got to it, and it was actually like, oh, wait, there's actually some cool things that happen in here. And yes, you know, Rand is kind of a douche the entire time, but, you know, other than that...
I hate Rand in that book.
What?
I hate Rand in that book. It's like the pages and pages of him laying in the mud and flailing around.
You're supposed to hate him. That's
I know, but that doesn't mean
I know, it works.
But anyway, but I forgot that there's actually a lot of cool stuff that actually happens in Path of Daggers. Mm-hmm. That it was like, oh, okay, well, this is not so bad. Now, of course, I'm about to get to Crossroads of Twilight. And,
I was going to say that you once, in your reread, you said something that is so spot on, and I wish I could take credit for it. It was so awesome, pithy and perfect, is that it. You said that most fans, the book that they dislike the most is the one that they first had to wait for. And mm-hmm. It is so true. And I just
I had to wait for The Shadow Rising, but I like that book.
Okay, well,
yeah,
you were the first person. You had to wait for Shadow Rising? Oh, my goodness, wow. And
I've been reading since I was 12.
Well, see, that's different, though, because The Shadow Rising, there's no possible empirical way you can write that book. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, the Shadow Rising was the first book that I couldn't just pick up, because my mom bought me the first three together and had me read them, and the Shadow Rising was the first one that I had to go look for. I got it from the library, and then I got The Fires of Heaven the next year for Christmas.
Okay.
So, yeah.
No, I read all first seven, like, basically, like, 10 days or something.
Mm-hmm.
With Facebook. And then the Path of Daggers was the first one I had to wait for, and I was really pissed when I read it. I remember being like, God damn it! And then, you know, and then, yeah. So, but it's actually not as bad as I remember it being. I was expecting way more than it was going to be, and blah, blah, blah. You guys know all that spiel.
Yeah.
Now, I
found that my enjoyment of the series decreased a little bit when I started hanging out on the internet and nitpicking and like really digging into things. Like when it was just me reading it by myself and not really having anyone to talk to about it, I loved everything. It was so awesome. But then when I got on the internet and people were much more critical of it and started pointing out things that I hadn't noticed, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And so there was a couple years when I was in college where, you know, I was a Wheel of Time fan, but, you know, it was more out of habit than anything else. And it wasn't until, I guess, Knife of Dreams came out that I was like, okay, yes, the series is awesome. I'm not just reading it because I've been reading it since I was a kid. I'm reading it because I love it.
I'm gonna vote to have that whole thing that Jen just said completely removed from the podcast, because Jen, you basically just said, I'm the leader of a large Wheel of Time community, but I did not enjoy the Wheel of Time because I went to a large Wheel of Time community.
I'm not saying it ruined my life or anything, but...
No, it would be great. Thanks, Jen. I appreciate it. So, yeah, don't listen to her, everyone. Wheel of Time is even better if you go to websites like dragonmouth.com.
I can counter Jennifer's evil influence by saying that, you know, I stumbled onto the internet after, I think it was after Path of Daggers came out, and I was like, I'm pissed off about this, and nobody around me actually cares, so I have to find somebody to talk to about this. And so I was like, there's this thing, it's called the internet. And that was basically what I knew about it at the time, literally. I mean, like, I don't think I even really knew how to do email at that point. And
how funny.
That, well, we had said, because, I was a junior in college at that point, and it was, like, 1997. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, late adopter much. Anyway, so I stumbled onto the internet, somehow found the Rec Arts group, and the rest is dreaded history. But there were so many things. I really loved it because, yes, people were more critical and everything like that, but at the same time, when I, you know, that was when I found the Wheel of Time stack, and I was like, oh, my God, I kind of knew that all this crap was in there, but I had no idea, you know, and all the, you know, real-world references and, like, the all the little sly things that he stuck in there.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some of them, and then I found so many more, and it was just like, this is freaking awesome, dude.
See, that's the experience I'm having now, because I'm rereading the series, I'm redoing the fact for you, and I'm like, I never noticed.
You're not redoing
before.
The fact for me.
So cool.
You're redoing the fact for the other people.
Well, I'm taking it over for you. Like every time Linda updates her blog, I get excited because I'm going to learn something that I didn't know before about the series. I love it when you update your reread because, you always point out something that I missed. And I think I was just hanging out with the wrong people before on the internet.
We got to get some better friends.
Of no crowd.
I know. Well, that's really, it made a big difference to me to get online. And I was a very early adopter. I got on before it even was on the internet, when it was basically like bulletin board stuff, all text. And you had to pay by the minute. It was really horrible. I didn't even know why I did it, but he was there. I had to. It was like my precious. I had to do it.
Did you have to churn your own butter too?
Sorry?
You have to churn your own butter and
pretty much. Yeah.
Your computer was powered by gerbils running in wheels.
I still can't look at cows, honestly. But the online experience really enhanced my enjoyment of the books because, first of all, it got me into contact with some people who also enjoy it, and none of my circle of friends had ever read it or even wanted to, no matter how much I would harp on it. And so that was a big plus. And then I was in Surtur, but we sort of went past it. But, like Dragon Mountain, all these things, it makes a big difference because, you find out things about the series that you might have missed, and then, like, reading your reread lead is incredible because there are certain things like, okay, I always had Winter's Heart in my mind. Some parts of it were like, oh, my God, not this one again. I'd go through my reread every year, and it's like, okay, I'm getting to this part again. And I always, the farm adding scenes were, okay, farm adding again. And when I read your read through and then all the comments on it, it put it into a whole new light for me. I thought, really, Rand was completely awesome at that point. And it actually made me enjoy that scene that I would have been almost skipping over,
Right? Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad I could do that for you.
That's an aspect of it that a person that just does the books in isolation, is probably never going to get. So I think it's a really good thing.
Virginia, getting back to your question from earlier and, back on the topic of Towers of Midnight.
Yeah, that would be good.
I can almost hear the people listening to this in their car on their iPods going, that's great, people, but get back on topic. I want to know more.
I was just thinking that.
That Towers of Midnight thing. Yeah, that. Oh, yeah.
Your question was...
I was just glad we could have a conversation without a euphemism for once.
Yeah. So in terms of, I agree with Lee that it's difficult for me to place the book numerically, where it is. Is it my number three favorite or anything? What I'll do is, I said this on my online review, that compared to Gathering Storm, I prefer Gathering Storm. Now, that's not to say that this is a bad book. That is so far from it that that's not even true. I love this book, and there are more beautiful, there's all these moments of awesome, to use the Lee's term, as we described earlier and kind of gushed over. There's some really wonderful stuff. But for me personally, I preferred that focus that we talked about. I mean, I remember as I read Gathering Storm, I just pounded through it, and I was just so, every page, just it wouldn't let me off the hook. How much deeper is Rand going to go? How much more can Egwene take before she just, is she going to snap? And what's going to happen here to Elida and everything?
I disagree with you on that one. I mean, like I said, I mean, I get why you think that, and of course, you're totally free to hold your own opinion. But in my opinion, I really much prefer Towers of Midnight overall. I just think that, and I think it's partially because I have more kind of idiosyncratic reactions to certain kind of things. Because yes, Gathering Storm, fabulous, and of course, Egwene's whole storyline was like smash bang awesome from start to finish. But I spent the whole time being so freaking mad at Rand. just being like, oh my God, please pull your head out, and be a normal person again, which, obviously that's kind of ridiculous for me to say, but at the same time, I was just so so upset, you know, the whole time mm-hmm. with him and his whole thing. And
it's watching somebody hit rock bottom. It's awful.
Well, I mean, yeah, and again, I totally acknowledge and I totally agree that that was completely necessary and it had to happen and mm-hmm. it would not have been...
It doesn't make it pretty, though.
No. It doesn't mean that I'm going to have fun. Like, yes, I understand that we need to go have the, you know, the proctology exam, but that does not mean that we all think we're going to enjoy it, you know? Like, I just... if you get where I'm going with that, you know? So, you know, this is my thing. So, like, it's my whole thing is like, okay, yes, it was terrible, it was awful. Now I never want to read about it again. Let's get on to the happy, fun stuff. And so, and not that there's...
Well, that's another question that I have. I wonder, I'm sure you can't answer it. Is this book got more happy, fun stuff in it? Is everybody going to poop rainbows at the end of this, or is this going to be a really sad ending, you know?
Okay, well, I can tell you, I can't answer the question directly, but let's just say, I am saying that there's definitely, like, what Jason was saying, which was that there's, Tower of the... Sorry, I can't talk right now. The Gathering Storm was very focused, and it was very all, you know, here's Rand, here's O'Brien, and, yeah, other people, too. And then, but this one kind of very much opens up in scope, and you're flying all over the map, and lots and lots and lots and lots of things happen. So almost empirically, it simply can't be as dark as it was, you know, just because you're running around like a maniac the entire time, you know? That makes the slightest amount of sense. I don't know.
There are some positive things that happen for some characters in Towers of Midnight. There are some things that might be considered a positive resolution. There are also some things where you're like, oh, it's going to be like that. That's not very nice.
For instance, there's a chapter called This One is for Virginia, and it's all about Bella running through happy little hills with rainbows and ribbons.
With Ty Deshar, who is now a stallion again, right?
Exactly.
resurrecting the equine milk here, right? Okay, yeah, I got it.
That completely happened.
I'm not sure that might have been cut from the version.
That's good, because I really wanted my name in the book, and I didn't know if it was ever going to happen. I mean, I donated. I mean, hey.
I've got one. This is, and this is Jenna. I'm sure Brad would approve of this. I can say very especially, all I will say is that one of the Fourth Age podcasters is in the book as a cameo.
Yes, one of the podcasters is in there. I was very excited when I saw that name.
Yeah, Jen and I were texting each other like, did you see? And so
I know.
I'm so mad.
Well, I know Brandon posted on his Facebook page last year or sometime that a mirror, I think, was going to be in it. So that's not a... Not a secret for him.
Well, then there you go. Well, Amir then will be very, very pleased with.
I know. It was really hard when I read that part not to like get on Facebook and message him immediately and say, Amir, guess what? You're in Towers of Midnight and it's awesome.
Yeah.
going back to
there were a couple. Let's just say there were a couple of times I went, ha ha. You like that? Yeah.
I know that person. That person's cool.
Oh, my God. I keep hoping. I keep looking at the Facebook page, but I never see my name.
Lee, earlier you said that when you were talking about, you know, you're reacting to how Rand was in Gathering Storm. Mm-hmm. I won't say anything, but in Towers of Midnight, one of the questions I had going into Towers of Midnight, after I read Gathering Storm, I think a lot of other people...
I already know what you're going to ask. All right, go ahead.
The heck is... Yeah, you do know. Is what the heck is Rand going to be like when he comes off the mountain? What's his, you know, what's his personality going to be like?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of get you guys' take on that, because honestly, and I'll just say this outright, I struggled with it a little bit. I wasn't... I guess I was kind of expecting it, perhaps, but... Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I was like, okay, it wasn't what I had precisely expected. And so, and it's still very cool, and I see where it's going, but I can't say that I was just overjoyed and loved it and totally compelled by it. I was, what do you guys think? I don't know. I'm not very articulate.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a very understandable personality change, but it does not make him relatable anymore. I can't put myself in that situation, and I can't put myself in that frame of mindset anymore. So it's really, really cool to read about, and it's very understandable. It's very, very natural. It's part of Rand's character progression, and it no part of it doesn't make sense, but it's just it feels like there's a distance between the reader and Rand now when you look at the book.
Lee, I know you want to jump in on that, but just one very quick reaction to that is I will caveat and say that may be because, again, just it's not a huge spoiler, but we are not often in Rand's head. We are usually seeing him from someone else's eyes. And so that could have been my reaction.
And I think that's probably why I had that reaction where he seems very distant now, because we'd spent so much time in Rand's head in the Gathering Storm and, you know, seeing, like, you know, how far to the bottom he can get. And then you see him in Towers of Midnight more or less through the eyes of others, and everybody's reacting to him a certain way because of the changes he's gone through.
Well, there was a lot of foreshadowing for the sort of the Fisher King sort of arc, and if he goes in that direction, that certainly would make him, you know, more distant and, you know, unrelatable.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, what's your take?
In a way.
Huh?
What's your take on it?
I'm going to have to pull a no comment on this one.
Okay.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk after the podcast.
Yeah. Sorry. November 2nd, spoiler review. Be there or be square.
We'll be there.
Come on.
I'll have to read it on the 3rd whenever I wake up.
Okay, well, there's only so many questions that I can ask because I have not read The Towers of the Night. So let me throw it out to you guys. Is there something in particular that you want to mention about it that you can mention?
There's a really awesome book trailer out there for it, and people are going to view it.
Yeah, I've watched it like 20,000 times.
I know, it was really cool.
Plug.
And I have deliberately not mentioned the topic of that book trailer on this call. So if anybody was listening and hoping that they'd hear about that particular person, they shall get nothing.
All, did we?
I've been trying to stay away from that, but you know what? I can't say it because you said that you weren't. Certainly hoping for the resolution of that particular story arc, which I think we do get.
Nothing. Read the chapter with Bella and the Rainbows.
Bella and Rainbows. It's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's actually an answer to your question that I can think of. Anything that I particularly want to say about the book yet, and honestly, I really don't.
Yeah.
Well, because I mean, there's like a million things I want to say, but I really, I think we're sort of veering into, you know, hazardous territory here. So
okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting more and more reluctant to say anything at this point.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something a little more generic then.
Okay.
We did see a few new characters pop up in The Gathering Storm, the warder, whose name I can't pronounce, Knife or whatever. We saw a few new people that look like they're going to be significant. Do we see any significant new characters in The Towers of Midnight?
Definitely.
Yeah. There are some people that have thought of at least two
off the top of my head.
Okay. Because, I mean, I was kind of not expecting that we would, because this is really, we're in sort of wrap-up of story arc mode, you know, and he's got, 1,800 characters to deal with that he's mentioned during the book, and some of them are still active, so, you know, at this point in time, it's either get them, resolve them, or kill them off, you know, one of the three, so.
There are definitely things that happen that you really want to see. And the only people around are people who have not either gotten attention before or have not gotten a lot of attention, but they're really cool things that you want to see.
Yeah, definitely. Like what I was about to say was that there are new characters introduced, but they're not introduced. I didn't find them gratuitous at all, which is in the sense that why are we getting this new person? Like, no, this person totally needed to be there. You know,
felt like this person belonged in the story.
Yeah, and I was very excited about at least one of them, and then that kind of went to shit. But anyway, I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm not. Jason probably knows what I'm referring to, but
yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I do.
And I was like, share it.
I guess one other thing I can't say it's not related to the plot, is that there's a lot of people out there who have been reading The Wheel of Time for a lot of years, and somewhere down the road, they said, hey, this is great, and they still love the books, and probably they even, you know, go to Dragamount or Tor or any of these other websites on occasion to kind of get the latest scoop and stuff. But I think there's a large portion of people who have said, I'm just going to wait until the series is over, and then I'm going to go out and buy all the paperbacks or the e-books or whatever and read them all straight through. And that is perfectly valid. I think that's awesome, and I can't wait for those people to do that. I would submit to them and to anyone that Towers of Midnight is a great chance to pick up, not pick up where you left off, but this is the beginning of that time where I think people who gave up after Lord of Chaos or after Crown of Swords or, you know, got fed up with Path of Daggers or whatever it is, right? This would be a great time to get a recap from Tor.com, download a recap from Dragonmount, or, you know, and if you're an avid listener but you have a friend who is big on the series up until one of those books, direct them over to Lee's reread, direct them over to Dragonmount. We've got PDFs that you can download to kind of recap them or bring them up to speed and stuff. This is, I think, a great time to get things going, get caught up, get through Towers of Midnight, and then boom, we're going to be right into Memory of Light. I think this is a really exciting time, and you know, the release of Towers of Midnight, I think, is a true beginning
of the Age of Aquarius.
The age of whatever the third age is.
The end is nigh. Get on the bus.
Get on the bus.
Uh-huh.
No, but you're right.
Pull it out of the park.
Oh, my God.
Right now.
Is that a spoiler? We're getting buses? Wait a minute. We've got steam engines now. We're getting buses? Oh, my God.
You figured
no,
this out.
No, that's just Thomas the flying steam engine, man. I'm demanding my steam engine. It's been a long day. You'll have to forget me.
Yeah, this is asking a lot for late on a Friday evening for you East Coast people. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
That's all right. We'll soldier on. But, you know, I completely am making fun of Jason because that's always fun. But I do also happen to agree with him that the people who did, and I do know quite a few people who did get disillusioned with the series and kind of dropped it. most of them tend to be around the Crossroads Twilight juncture. Some of them earlier, some of them whatever, but like I would agree.
My husband's one of them.
Yeah, I would agree though that if you are at all inclined to get back into it, this would be the time to do it. It's definitely, like I said, I can't objectively judge these last two books against the early ones because, you know, they're very close to my heart, but they are definitely much better than where the series kind of bogged down, which I think was like, you know, around the cross of the Twilight. So
yeah. Even if people can tell the difference between Brandon's writing and what he added and, you know, and Jim's, and some people said, oh, it's clear that his voice, it's not the same voice and everything, as we talked about earlier. That's right. I think Brandon first among all people is not saying, I am imitating this voice. I think what's important, and I think all of us would agree, and most people who read Gathering Storm 2, is that the Wheel of Time, the story, the feel of the series, the characters, by and large, are all alive and well. This story is thriving, and this story is coming to its end. It might not be the same exact words or whatever that, you know, that Robert Jordan wouldn't have done, but this is, there's no doubt about it, that the Wheel of Time itself is alive and well, just being told by somebody else.
Absolutely.
Partially.
Yeah. I actually told Brandon that the last time that we talked to him. I said, you know, it's our nature as, you know, podcasters and readers and people to dissect stuff and comment and criticize and everything like that. And I said, you know, do not take that that we're unhappy with anything. It's just our nature to be that way, because you nailed it. I mean, if I had to give him a score on how good The Gathering Storm was, considering what he got dropped into and how he pulled it off, I mean, it would be like, you know, 98% or better. He really just nailed it. I mean, you can nitpick, but he got the book out and he got it done really well. So, you know, yeah, you can sit there and you say, oh, this voice is a little off or whatever else, but that's just the nitpicky stuff. You know, and in the long run, who cares? It's really, the story is still there. Like you said, the story is still alive, and that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm of two minds. I can't wait for the resolution in the next couple of books. There was a point where, not being a youngster, I was actually wondering if I would live long enough to see the end of the series. I was really actually concerned about that. I mean, I'm 59, okay? I just revealed, oh, my God. But, you know, I was really wondering if it was ever going to happen in my lifetime. And now I can see the end in sight, and it's bittersweet because I want to know, but I don't want it to end. I mean, yeah. The anticipatory delight of waiting for the next book is kind of part of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah, I agree with you, but I'm kind of right there with you as far as that goes. You know, it's like, yes, it'll be awesome to finally have the story finished one way or the other. But on the other hand, I've literally spent pretty much my entire adult life waiting for the Wheel of Time. So,
mm-hmm.
like, what that's going to feel really strange, for a while.
Yeah,
it's
going to be weird, because I've been reading since I was 12, like I said before, and I'm 30 now. What is it going to feel like not to have a Wheel of Time book coming out in a couple years? You know, what's it going to be like to not be waiting for the next Wheel of Time book? I don't know what that's like.
Had a little foretaste of that with the Harry Potter series. You know, we were just anxiously awaiting each book, you know, and going to
Harry
the midnight
Potter
release parties
though,
and all that.
Because Harry Potter was so much of a shorter time span.
Absolutely, But, I mean, on a smaller scale,
I started
scale,
reading it about the time
too.
The fourth book came out, and they came out pretty quickly. Then it was a much shorter series. I don't have this emotional attachment to Harry Potter.
But there was this point where the last book came out and you kind of went like, oh, there aren't any more.
That's all.
What am I going to look forward to? You know, but you know, there's the Wheel of Time, but that's going to be a major dislocation.
But you know, at the same time, guys, you know, I'll be the optimist here. I'll be the first to cry on my pillow like everyone else when the last book is out. But remember, too, that, you know, this is not the end of all things Wheel of Time. There are, you know, movies on the horizon. There are video games on the horizon, and not just, you know, video game adaptations of the movie. I mean, like, there are, you know, unique, original stories, and, you know, Brandon's involved, and Harry's involved, and, you know, Team Jordan's involved and stuff. There's new readers that are going to be... through those things are going to be drawn to this series, which means they're going to be, you know, new thriving communities and everything else. So, you know,
I don't feel like the Wheel of Time is going to end that day that I finished the last book. I just feel like this part of my life is going to be over, and I'm not sure what the next part is going to feel like.
It'll be a new age. We'll move from the third age of books to the fourth age of
digital media.
Of visual media.
The breaking is never fun.
The breaking is never fun. But there are never beginnings or endings to the Wheel of Time. So there you go.
God.
I know. I had to end it on a cheesy note. So.
Yeah.
Well, have they ruled out the Outriggers? I mean, there's still hope for those, too, isn't there? I mean, a couple of them.
I
don't think so.
The standing line on the Outriggers is the standing point that Brandon has made, and he said this is most recently at Dragon Con, I believe, and maybe in some other interviews, is that the Outriggers, you know, for those not familiar with it, the Outriggers are Robert Jordan. Before he passed away, he said that he had two more prequels to write, the story of how Tam left the Two Rivers and became a captain of the Illiners and Blade Master and all that, and how he found Rand as a baby, and then another story of how Moraine and Lan make it to the Two Rivers just in time, you know, before the, you know, to take two boys out. Those were the prequels, and he also said he had an idea for some Outrigger novels, and the subject of those stories, it's kind of been, it's been leaked online. It's kind of known, but it's a little spoiler, so I won't mention what it's about, but it takes place with a different character.
It was battle.
Wasn't it mentioned at JordanCon?
Yeah, that was already announced what it would be at JordanCon. A lot of people were like, oh, that's a spoiler. Now I know that so-and-so lives.
Yeah,
well,
I think that's
now, but really, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's
exactly. But anyway, I won't go in there. But anyway, Robert Jordan had planned five more novels beyond A Memory of Light. There are, as I understand it, minimal notes for that. And Brandon has said that it has been his recommendation to Harriet to not do those. But if Harriet wanted to do them, that he would be the one to write it because of his attachment to the series, he would want it done right. He'd want it to be done consistently with everything else. So he would go ahead and do it. And he's not opposed to
honestly,
it.
Honestly, I probably wouldn't read it.
Well, you know, that makes perfect sense because you know what they say. Only Peter Jackson could direct The Hobbit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's exactly. Absolutely right.
And like I think, Jen, like you said, I agree too. I mean, maybe I can be a little more blunt about it, but I hope that this doesn't turn into one of the, everyone has a favorite book series or something where they love the original books, and then maybe the author passed away, or maybe it just became less good and they just start turning these things up over and over and over.
Yeah,
we don't want
that. Yes.
No.
Oh my God! If I ever run into Kevin J. Anderson at DragonCon, I'm going to punch him.
We just don't want. I think no one would want. No one wants the series to be exploited. And
yeah.
Now there's the counter argument to that is too. Is that like, you know, hey, these are great ideas, and I would love to know the story of, you know, Tam. I would love to know the story of Moraine and Megan to the True Version Time. But
yeah.
My personal take on it is that, you know, there's, first of all, I mean, I think that's part of the tragedy that we lost Robert Jordan, and that's just a reality and a tragedy, and that we should embrace that.
Yeah, we're not going to get everything now.
Yeah. Now, on the positive side, on the other side, that's fertile ground for people to explore in movies and games and all sorts of other things, you know, that we talked about can be part of that fourth age of Wheel of Time or whatever we're calling it. And so, you know, that's fertile ground for a lot of that stuff to be explored. And maybe that's how and where those notes that Robert Jordan left behind, those stories that he did write down, the things that he did, have in his notebook or whatever, that's where those things can then get translated to.
And Harriet's also working on that encyclopedia, so some of this material may pop up in the Wheel of Time encyclopedia that she's going to be releasing.
Yeah, that would be great, too.
Yeah, comic books to look forward to, a whole slew of them. The Wheel of Time is not going away. We're not going to shut down DragonMount.com the day A Memory of Light comes out.
Oh, good.
I get that question so much. Like, you know, are you going to, what are you going to do with DragonMount once the series is done? Or, you know, are you still going to do the track at DragonCon? Or, you know, what's the plan for JordanCon after the series? It's like, we're just going to keep going, guys. There's still plenty to talk about. We haven't run out yet.
That's kind of like, are they going to shut down the OneRing.net because Tolkien died like 7 years ago?
That is always the example I give OneRing.net is still online. It's still awesome. There's still plenty of a conversation going on there because there's still so much to talk about with Tolkien because you always have new people coming to the series. A lot of people came into the fandom for Tolkien because of the movies coming out and they're like, I got to go read these books now. And so I think the fandom will shift a lot because it's going to move away from being primarily a literature-based fandom, which is going to be kind of weird for us because we're going to have a lot of people who don't know how to spell now coming into our fandom.
We already have them bad.
We already have some, but we can make fun of them right now. we're going to have whatever the equivalent of a Legolas fangirl is coming into the Wheel of Time fandom. It's going to be weird. There's going to be like people photoshopping whatever poor actor has to play Matt Cathan onto porn actor's body.
My head is
pasted
on, yay! I'm going to have to brush up on my troll flaming skills. Not that they ever really went away.
It'll be like the. I have a feeling, you know, maybe what will end up happening is that we talked about, you know, the third age becoming the fourth age of Wheel of Time fandom. We're going to be like, you know, the like the Gen Ale, you know, like from way back. We'll be like, no, hold to the old ways of Wheel of Time fandom, and everyone's going to be like, what are you talking about, you know?
Back in my day, we actually had paper books. We got paper cuts from them.
Back in my day.
You're still putting all that junk around.
We will be the remnant of the remnant that is left behind or something, you know?
I get off my lawn.
They totally get off my lawn. What do you mean? Like, yeah, they won't see the purpose of the Wheel of Time fact, you know? It's like, huh? It's all been answered. Why would you make a website questioning these
things? Yeah. People out there didn't see the purpose of the fact, like, back in 1992 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
Well,
they'll all be saying, get out of my swamp, you kids.
They're always handfuls and who don't appreciate beauty when they see it.
Those are probably the same people that told Matt Hatch that his website would never be successful because it had graphics on it.
You know? Oh, yeah. Wow. Those people, those
okay.
Four, that's all. yeah, no. So, yeah, but I agree that there will be a whole different thing coming in, and it'll be a very interesting thing to see how that all develops and everything like that. But I think it's good because I... One of the things that always I think is not fair. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but you know, it's just Jordan, the Wheel of Time. All of this is like it's so well known in the particular circle that it's known, but it's not known at all outside of that. Which
that'll
yeah.
change. Yeah,
it hasn't broken the pop culture yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which it's not like Lord of the Rings, even before the movies came out, had sort of had to an extent done that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, obviously the quintessential example is Harry Potter, but, you know, Jordan always managed to just kind of fly right under that radar.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And so I think it'll be really, really interesting to see if and how and where it kind of, impacts on the larger mainstream scene. And
well, it couldn't have been too far,
you know,
under the radar. I mean, so many of them hit number one on the bestseller list. I mean, somebody's buying them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's
lots of things that are on the bestseller list that most people have never heard of. I mean, like, it's a little bit... I don't know how to explain it, but, like, you know, you walk up to, like, random Joe on the street and you say, you know, Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, even before all the movies came out, they'd heard of them, you know?
Yeah,
they may not have read it, but they've heard of it.
Right, you're right.
Or aware of its existence, whereas, you know, I can walk up to, you know, random Joe person on the street and say Wheel of Time, and they'll be like, I have no idea.
Huh?
Yeah. This is true.
It's
very interesting to me how it's just kind of been right there, simmering underneath the I'm losing that metaphor there. But, you know, it's just, there's a pot and it's boiling. I don't know. Go.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see that changing. I mean, like, unlike Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings are extraordinary and they're huge and everything else, and you know, so is Twilight now and everything. But I think the Wheel of Time is in this unique position where it is one of these rare franchises. The other one being, you know, George Martin's The Song of Ice and Fire. That these are franchises that have huge established fan bases, but at the same time are on the verge of crossing that threshold and becoming these huge franchises that, you know, there's not a lot of other franchises that are poised to go big and to have all this, you know, these games and movies and TV shows.
Yeah, and get that mainstream attention.
And get mainstream attention. And, A Song of Ice and Fire will probably go first because of the HBO show that's being developed now, and, you know, all hints suggest that it'll be very good. But even that's going to have, you know, that's going to be done right and that's going to be done great, but that's going to be like a hard R. So that's going to be, you know, hard sell for the massive, you know, 18 to 40 demographic or, you know, the teenage demographic. Whereas
it'll still be very much a niche market.
Yeah, maybe not niche, but yeah, it'll be a little more limited.
It'll be smaller. It'll be limited
in that you can't have eighth graders are not going to latch onto it. Whereas
right.
The Wheel of Time is like
I give my eighth graders to read.
Yes, Wheel of Time is classic PG-13 fare, where it is, you know, with a little more traditional heroism and that sort of thing, and it's just waiting to be gobbled up by everyone from those seventh and eighth graders, you know, up to Virginia. What do you say? You're 59 years old and beyond. So that's what's great. So I think that the point is that we're all like kind of agreeing with each other. But yes, by and large, this franchise is ready to explode, and I think that it's just going to coincide magically, as these things tend to do, you know, where, you know, life imitates art or whatever, is where right when the book is ending and we have this huge climactic ending that changes the age of the books, I think we're going to see this shift of it popping into the mainstream, because, you know, it'll be about that time that, you know, potentially the movie comes out when the series ends. It'll be about that time that all these games get going and everything else. And so, whereas the book people are going to be saying, oh, you know, that's great, I can't wait, there's going to be all these new people saying, dude, have you guys heard of Eye of the World? It's so cool. I can't wait to read the second one.
I really that's envy true. Somebody who's coming into the series at this point, you know, brand new and getting to read it all.
That was kind of hilarious. Sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was asking if that was his imitation of a young boy, because that was...
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude.
Like, totally rad and stuff. Yeah.
All right, okay, that's how I was when I was 13. Sorry. So, yeah, I didn't get many dates when I was a teenager, okay?
Yeah, you know, I don't think they say, you know, rad anymore, man. I think that's kind of done.
Well, I don't know. They were saying cool when I was a teenager, and we're still saying that, so I don't know.
Well, cool is one of the unkillable words.
Uh-huh.
It's like I don't know. It's one of those things that I think that's been around for about 50 years at this point.
Not too many people say neato anymore, though.
Huh?
Not too many people say neato anymore, though.
Well, only ironically.
Yeah. Oh, neat.
You can't say it seriously, otherwise you'll be beaten.
I used the word rad when I was writing a fact article today.
Well, I have been known to use the term groovy, but only with tongue firmly in cheek. So.
But have you said blood and bloody ashes very often? That's what I want to know.
No.
No.
It's just unfortunate. A lot of the signature catchphrases in the Wheel of Time just don't really work in real life.
But the cursing,
they make really awesome tattoos.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people with time to toss the dice tattoos.
Wait, I'm sorry, I'm a little floored over here. You have Wheel of Time tattoos?
No, I don't. I've seen them.
Do a Google search. Do sometime go into Google, type Wheel of Time tattoos, and do a Google image search.
Well,
and
I remember there was a guy at JordanCon 2009, which is the one that I went to, who had the colored raven tattoos.
Yeah.
Which was
He's
kind
the
of
same like, guy that this year he was the Green Man. So he actually like came in on stilts, like
oh,
covered
no
with plastic leaves. It was awesome.
He didn't like have plants simultaneously implanted in his skin or anything, did he?
No. They were glue. He got camouflage, and he hot glue gunned plastic leaves all over himself.
Oh my God!
And was on stilts and painted his face green and had like a little leaf crown that he was wearing. It was a really great costume. There's video of it on YouTube now.
Yeah.
Oh wow! I was my jaw kind of dropped when I saw his tattoos that they're I think I was like wow that's wow
that's pretty hard
that's commitment right there.
But yeah, there was a guy at DragonCon this year who did a matte costume for our costume contest, and one of the things that he did when he was showing off his stuff to the judges, he rolled up his sleeve and he had in the old tongue written time to toss the dice.
Wow.
And the judges gave him bonus points for that.
Well, you know, hey, I'd have to agree with that ruling, really, because wow, that's commitment right there.
If you want to see like some really like crazy Wheel of Time stuff, not crazy because these people are perfectly sane, but you know, out there, if you go into the Dragonmount Facebook, there's a picture gallery that you know people just add stuff to all the time, and a lot of people put pictures of their tattoos in there. One of the administrators of Dragonmount has the chapter icons on his wrists, and so his pictures are in there. And this other guy made, he went out and had someone custom do his motorcycle with pictures from the covers of the Wheel of Time. So he had like this tricked out Wheel of Time motorcycle that
no
he drives
way.
Around. Yeah, so you definitely
that's
have to go
cool.
find that in our Facebook.
I say I'm falling behind. I got to go get some ink, you know, right now.
Yeah. I thought about getting a tattoo for my 30th birthday last year, and my husband talked me out of it, but it would have been like one of the Wheel of Time chapter icons.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
As, you know, as tattoos go, you know, at least that's like, at least you're not getting like a, you know, like a tramp stamp of when you think it's like some really cool Chinese character and it's actually just Kung Fu.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do something like that. It's like, okay, what do I like enough to put on my body permanently? Well, obviously the Wheel of Time. So it's going to be like the Flame of Tarvalon chapter icon someplace that my students would never see.
Well, which icon would you use, though?
What's that?
Which icon would you put on?
The Flame of Tarvalon, the one that's the white flame.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Dragon banner.
That makes total sense. That would not be the one that I would pick, but the...
Not the Banner of Light one, you know, with the complete...
No, symbol. Not that one.
Mm. No. I'd pick the Dragon Banner. Lee, what would you pick?
Honestly, I would have to go with either the Dragon Banner or the ancient symbol of old, the yin yang, full yin yang.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of been my default emblem for years, so you know that kind of follows. Of course,
although as far as artistic, some of the other ones, you know, like the Windfinder, Seafolk one is really cool.
I really like the Forsaken icon. I think that's cool.
Yeah, there's some of them that are really awesome. You know,
that's a really cool one. And then there's one that's it's one of the more recent ones. I think it was in New Spring, and I think it was Dang Nabbit. Oh, I can't think of it. Wait, hold on. I'm sitting in front of my computer. Let's find it.
There are a number of them that are pretty cool. The white one is really cool.
Is it the six pointed star?
That might be it. Where is the bloody? Oh, here it is. Okay.
Strongrail?
The dice is probably pretty popular. Yeah.
The dice, you know. I always liked, Joe Shaw's contribution, which was like, note the five sixes. Yupsie! I always liked that one. Wait, hang on. I've got... it was one of the newer ones. It wasn't the Catalan icon, because, you know, we all know how I feel about her.
It's one I really like, and it's escaping my memory at the moment. I can't remember it.
Virginia, while she's...
Well, Lan gets his own icon in New Spring, which is kind of cool. And
it's like a helmet.
And then
the helmet.
Swan gets her fancy fish.
Fish. And then Moraine and... someone gets the mice. It's like Swan and Moraine kind of together.
Yeah, Swan and Moraine get the mice.
Why do they have mice again?
While they were novices, they let some mice out to pester a whole bunch of other Aes Sedai, and it was kind of
they
like
put them in Elida's bed. That's the part I like.
Oh,
about
that's
that story.
Right.
Yeah.
It was the night they were raised to Aes Sedai, and. They're supposed to spend the night in prayer and contemplation and whatever. And Swain is all like, no, I got some mice. Let's go find a light as dead.
Yeah, I think that's great.
That's awesome.
A little issue.
I knew there was a reason I liked them.
Yeah.
It's a triangle made out of wood bound together.
Oh, yeah. The thing that they birched people on.
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's what they would strap them to when they were going to birch them.
Yeah.
That's just kind of creepy. Okay, so...
Lee, get that one as a
all right,
tattoo.
All right.
We all know how much I love corporal punishment.
Yeah.
I know how
there
much you love
no problem
spanking.
In the Wheel of Time series that cannot be solved with a vigorous spanking.
That's right. I know how much you love spanking, Lee. I know that's a real issue with you.
Well, you know,
I can't wait for
it.
Wait for them to show that in a movie, you know?
That would be something really interesting to contemplate. Like, how exactly are they going to shoot, like, Egwene's being raised to a Merlin? Like, you know, it's a room full of naked women. You know, like, how are they going to
maneuver that one, I wonder.
Discreet lighting.
By the time it gets made, it'll probably be like the FCC rules will have been readjusted so that, you know, you can totally have like...
Yeah, you're, you know...
Nipples are cool now.
Yeah, by the time they get that made, it'll be against the rules to not be naked or something, you know. But getting back to the Towers of Midnight and chapter icons, do we get... Trying to drag us back on topic here, and which is for me a stretch because I'm usually the tangent queen. Okay.
Well, before we get into it, Virginia, I'm sorry, but I am 30 minutes overdue, so I need to hop off here. So.
Okay. Well, one quick question, maybe you can answer.
We'll make fun of you once you're gone.
Yeah, that's
like
fine.
Like we always do.
Okay. Well, then I guess we'll just keep going.
Did you have one last question?
Do we get new? Do we get new icons in Towers of Midnight?
You know, Lee might be the one that has to answer that because the version that I saw we didn't even have chapter titles. One of the fun things I got to do when I finally got the actual copy of the book was go through and see what they named all the chapters because they have chapter names. Very rarely.
I have all the chapters. Ha ha.
Mine do not too, so ha-ha.
Rub it in.
All right. Well,
I am nothing, so.
Ladies, it was very much a pleasure. So thanks for having me on, Virginia. And Lee and Jen,
thanks.
I will talk to you guys another time. I got to run.
Always.
Later.
See you later.
Always, Jason. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good night, guys. Bye.
Good night.
Okay, so I'm flipping through here to see if there's any new icons, because I actually don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen the finished version, so I can't answer it.
I don't remember specifically seeing any new icons, but that does not mean. That's not a new one. This is the spiderweb one. That's one we had before.
Oh, yeah, we had that one in the Gathering Storm.
Yeah, that was in the Gathering Storm. So. La la. Yeah, no, that's not new either. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we could probably got at least one in here, but
I don't know.
And there's like 70,000 chapters. So, well, not 70,000, but you know, a lot.
Many, many.
many. There's a whole lot of crap happening in this book, you guys. Okay.
Yeah, this is a really meaty book.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I just can't wait. Like I said at the beginning, I think before we were recording, I sort of approached this interview with the same feeling that Galad must have had. Well, I can't even say that if we're not going to do spoilers, but yeah, because I just knew that you were going to torture me with all of your knowledge, which I can't access yet.
Well, you've only got a week or like 10 days left or something?
Yeah, it's like a week and a half.
A week and a half, yeah.
Something
like
that.
Seems like an eternity. That's about how long it's going to take me to drive up to Sacramento to go to the signing, I think. No, not quite. Not
yeah,
quite.
Y'all are having the big one this year in Sacramento.
The official release
is in Sacramento. And, of course, they're doing the midnight release in Provo, and I'm actually going to that.
I know. That's really cool.
Yeah, I told my parents that I was going to a party in Provo, and they're like, no, seriously, Jennifer, what are you going to go do in Provo? I'm like, no, there's going to be a party. I promise. Like, no, Jennifer, we've been to Provo. We know what it's really like.
There are no parties in Provo.
Yeah. I grew up in Salt Lake, so Utah was my stomping ground for a good 15 years or so.
So funny. I've only driven through it. That's as close as I've got.
The New York signing, I don't know how it's going to go, really, because it's the last one, and now everyone's going to be, like, freaking exhausted by that point.
Oh, yeah.
But
it won't
be there.
As bad
I mean,
as last time, though.
Huh?
It won't be as bad as last time because this tour is about half the length of the last one.
Yeah.
And they're only going to like 8 cities or something, right?
Yeah.
It's really 8 cities,
and then he's off to France for like a week or something like that.
Poor vacation.
Yeah, I'm off to France next week too. Huh? I always have.
Oh boy, that's rough.
Yeah, I know.
And what, he got a couple of days off a couple of weeks ago. He got to go to New York. What else does he want? I mean, gee. I actually feel kind of sorry for Brandon.
That he managed to publish, like, this ginormous, entirely other book in the middle of all this. I mean, I know.
Yeah, I know.
The guy must have just stopped sleeping. I couldn't have done it.
I don't even know how he does it. I really don't.
I said before, I think he really is an android and just not revealed it to us yet. No human could keep that pace up. Yeah, and no human could probably play magic the way he does either. You know.
Yeah, maybe he's got like that thing where, you know, this in Sandman where the guy had like captured a muse and like that was kind of horrible though. So I don't think Brandon's that mean. So we'll just have to assume that it's a really, really good work ethic.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Certainly better than anything I've ever aspired to. And I've tried, but I couldn't keep up that pace for 3 weeks, let alone years.
I can do it for maybe 2 days, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done. I've been a grown-up long enough.
Yeah, okay, I need some time off now.
Right.
I worked really hard for 4 days. I need a week off. I wish. Okay, so
yeah,
I have one more question that I was actually going to ask when Jason was on, which I'm sure you're going to raise, though. But do we find out in this book, I have to ask the obligatory question, who killed Asmodeus? Do we find out?
We'll have to read and find out.
Yeah, that's totally a Raffo.
Yeah.
I'm not asking who did it. Just, do we even know? Do we find out?
I don't even want to drop hints because people who listen to this are far too smart and they'll leave things in there that I don't even know are there. So, I'm not saying anything.
Yeah,
okay.
I have to go with Jennifer on this one. I can't say anything at all.
I think I remember Brandon saying something about Harriet had said that you can't even say that yet. So, but, you know, things change, so I thought I got to ask.
Well, we don't blame you for trying, but, you know.
The story that I heard about where they were deciding they were going to put the Asmodean thing in there is they knew that they wanted to reveal Asmodean's killer in one of the three books. And so he sat down with Harriet and they kind of figured out, okay, we know it was this character. When is the natural time to reveal this? And so they found a place in the story where it makes sense organically to say something on this topic. And so that obviously wasn't at the Gathering Storm, so it's either going to be in Towers of Midnight or it's going to be in A Memory of Light.
One of those two. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, I had to ask. I'm actually to the point where I almost don't even care anymore.
Healthy outlook to have. Okay, so while we've been talking, I've been going through the book and there may be one new icon. I'm not 100% positive that it's new, though.
Ooh,
because
what's it look like?
It might be... Well, I can't tell you.
tell me later.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, yeah, I can't tell you what it looks like because that's way... No, that's bad.
That'll be a spoiler.
But then again, I'm not even 100% sure that it's actually new. It may not be.
I'm not as up on them as I could be, so I probably wouldn't know if I saw it. I have to go and compare. I don't know them all by heart.
The icon that Lee does not recognize.
Yeah.
So we'll just leave it at that. Either she's forgotten it.
Well, it's entirely possible because I haven't, like I said, I haven't reread, like, I remember almost nothing at this point of either Knife of Dreams, and actually a lot of The Gathering Storm is kind of faded because I haven't, you know, I haven't looked at it again since, you know, I read it for the first time, for the first two times. And then I've, you know, been busy doing, you know, recap stuff. So, like, this icon very well could have been introduced in The Gathering Storm, and I just don't remember. So
I haven't really read it, The Gathering Storms, since maybe last December when I read through it for the second time, but we did basically a commentary on it for the podcast recently, but basically we just skimmed through it, you know, and hit the high points and everything. So it wasn't really a total read through. I was sort of waiting because I wanted to start the series at the end of the world and go all the way through. And if I'm really lucky, I'll get this done just before I get to Sacramento.
Right.
It's getting harder to do it all in a year, I'll have to say, you know, when you have a real life to go through and jobs to do it all.
I have not done a full reread of the Wheel of Time series since I was in high school. I reread the latter half of the series last year before The Gathering Storm came out. I had intended to read them all, like, from the Eye of the World on through, because I'm like, I need to do this. I haven't read them all straight through in one sitting before. So I sat down with the Eye of the World. I was like, I've read this book too many times. I don't need to reread it. So I skipped ahead to The Gathering Storm, The Great Hunt, and it was the same thing. And so I'm like, fine, I'm just going to skip ahead to where things aren't quite so familiar. And it turned out to be Lord of Chaos, which is when things started to get fuzzy. And that is about when I got into high school and college was Lord of Chaos, The Crown of Swords, and those books. So I wasn't able to reread those as obsessively as the ones that I was reading in junior high. I have a very good memory for things I read when I was 12, apparently.
I once put a post up on the Rec-Arts group, which I'm sure if someone were diligent enough, they could probably find. But I basically posted my guide to the good bits of Wheel of Time, which was, of course, up to that point, whatever it was. You know, it was probably somewhere around Winter's Heart. And basically because I used to do this thing where I would never do a full reread. I would skip around to all my favorite parts. You know, so I would just like flip through, okay, read that chapter, flip through, read that chapter, you know, and then just, you know, get to all the good parts and skip everything else.
Yeah.
So that's why I remember some things in, but in the later books, I just, you know, that I stopped even doing that much. So, you know, that's why I remember some things so incredibly clearly, because I read them like 100 times. And then, like, and there are other times I'm like, oh, wait, that happened, you know, so... Yeah, it's very kind of weird, but the later books especially I didn't reread nearly as much. Not because, I mean, it was partially because there was the slowdown and everything like that, but also because by the time Crossroads of Twilight and Knife of Dreams came out, I was much busier than I was. I mean, even though I was getting a double degree and working my ass off in college, somehow I had an amazing amount of free time. To both read books and argue about them on the internet. And at some point I was like, you know what? I really don't have 10 hours to argue with someone on Usenet about, you know, Phil Desmodian or whatever, you know, like.
Yeah, Crossroads of Twilight, I only read that one once and I didn't really like get into it a whole lot because that came out. I want to say it was right about when I did my student teaching, and so I just didn't have any time whatsoever for anything that wasn't, like, mission critical at that point. So I read the book, and that, okay, good, I read it. Now I'm not spoiled anymore if I go talk about it on the internet.
Right.
But, yeah, the first time I had reread it was when I did my reread last year.
Yeah, the first time I reread it, well, actually, I haven't reread it. I'm coming at it blind for the reread. Which should be interesting, you know, because I'd be like, oh, that happened.
Honestly, it was much better than I remembered it.
I know broadly what happened. I mean, like, I know what happened mainly, but a lot of the details are just completely gone. So that'll be really interesting because it's always kind of, I think people get a kick out of it when I get blindsided by something because, you know, otherwise I tend to know it pretty well and then I'll be like, okay, where the hell did this come from? You know.
It's really funny. I have a pretty good memory of the things that have happened in there, but I have the hardest time putting them down to which book. And that may be because up to the last 5 or 6 years, I've just read through the whole series in nonstop. So there's not the differentiation to me in
the book.
That's
one of the reasons why I can't pick a favorite book, because I can't remember when my favorite scene happened half the time.
Yeah. I'm going like, oh, my gosh,
well,
that scene
that was
Stone of Fear
was my guide was for.
Yeah.
That's what my guide was for, just to let you know where they are so that you can go right there. Of course, because, of course, your favorite parts are exactly the same as my favorite parts. I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Okay, my phone is starting to beep. I'm about to run out of battery.
Okay.
So I've got to take off, ladies.
Okay, well, should we just wrap this all up? Or do you,
yeah, I think we're probably getting to a close here.
Well, cool. I've had a lot of fun.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Well, come back.
I always like being on this podcast, so I'm going to find an excuse to do it again.
We're thrilled to have you.
Yeah. I think we should do another one, like, you know, pretty soon after Tower of Midnight comes out, so we can kind of.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Me and Jason did one last year like that, like within a couple of days of the release, so I think we should try that again.
That would be awesome. We're going to wrap this up now, and I want to thank Jason, who has had to leave a little early, Jennifer Lang, and Lee Butler for joining us with this spoiler-free review of the Towers of Midnight. Thank you, ladies, so much, and we will see you next time.
Okay.
Yep. Talk to you later. All right. Bye, guys.
Don't forget to join the Fourth Age as we broadcast live from the Towers of Midnight release party at the BYU Bookstore in Provo, Utah. You can find that at bit.ly/fourthagelive.